Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Humane Podcast, your tech insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-first world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and tech leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprises. Welcome back, listeners. Introducing Humane, the Tech Insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and the enterprise. For this week's recording, we're featuring Javier Laraski, who is the CEO and founder of HAL 9. What's HAL 9, you ask? We're going to go deep diving into the episode on that. And sounds like there's some homage to scientific literature as well. Javier, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, David. Super excited to be here and talk a little bit about generative AI for the enterprise.
Of course, it's definitely a fast-track topic in 2024 since all the evolution in the last year and a half. We've been quickly moving into enterprise use cases. But before we dive into there, love to share with our listeners about yourself. You've been a very avid contributor to multiple software and data companies and packages over the years. Could you share with us a little bit about your background and what led up to founding HAL 9?
Yeah, for sure, David. So my background is in software engineering, and I went to school for mathematics. So I've always had this passion for data processing, even before I knew that I was going to work all my life in data processing. Obviously, mathematics is foundational block on processing data, right? From statistics to many other fields, you know, more recently, deep learning and the like. And yeah, my entire career has been about kind of like helping people and businesses do more with by themselves with software in the realm of data processing. Out of college, I work at SAP in a product called NetWeaver back in the day, helping, again, integrate and orchestrate data. Then I moved to Seattle here, and I've been happy Seattle resident for many years to work at Microsoft in the Office Access team, which I don't know if that predates you, David, but it used to be a database, personal database for businesses to, again, help them manage their data sets, right? And, you know, we take for granted now databases and charts, but there was a point in time in the not so distant past where even doing a chart and, you know, analyzing a few million records, rows of records, it was pretty challenging. And that was kind of like the space where Office Access was. After that, I moved to work at Microsoft Research. And that's really where the fun started, I think, on my career. I was lucky enough to be involved in projects around big data and then deep learning. This way, before, you know, AI become mainstream, I had a pleasure and joy of doing one of the most interesting AI demos in Microsoft Research. Happened to present this to like 50,000 people in a stadium, and it was pretty epic. And, you know, back in the day, it was an application that would recognize what kind of dog breed something was. So again, like baby steps 10 years ago, but, you know, since then, from Microsoft Research, I moved to work at RStudio and started there what is used to be called, or it's called, the Multiverse team. We were focused on AI solutions and AI products. And what I learned from there after being on Microsoft Research is that it's one thing for researchers to be able to do AI. It's a whole different ballgame to get enterprises to do AI, right? You know, no enterprise has the resources of Google or Facebook or NVIDIA or Microsoft to do AI. So we really need to build building blocks that, in my case, a big proponent of open source packages. So those building blocks usually appear as technologies like TensorFlow and PyTorch. And I got to co-author MLflow with the Databricks team from the R side. And Databricks build a Python interface. So there's a lot of building blocks that we had to build during RStudio. Well, I was on RStudio to help enterprises really take full advantage of AI. And that obviously evolved into platforms. You know, Databricks, you might know better than me, but I think it's probably one of the most expected IPOs, either for this year or next one. And kind of like platforms got built around the research that came from machine learning, computer vision, and the like. And now we have like very interesting companies out there that provide those types of platforms. To me, really what got us to start HAL 9 was, it's hard to describe it in words in the sense, because it was more of an intuition when we left our studio to start what we're doing today. But we had an intuition there was another technology shift happening and a new type of technology and platform would have to be needed. My goal when I left our studio was to build enterprise tools that allowed business users leverage some of the open source packages that I was familiar with and that I helped co-author. And, you know, that back in the day did not exist. You know, business users usually don't use open source, mostly because open source is based in code. So myself and my co-founders and a few other people had this intuition that we kind of like needed like a new type of platform to help enterprises be more productive. Now, over the past couple of years, what we've realized is that the best way to help business users make use of open source tools which require coding is through what we know today as large language models. You know, in general, things like GPT-3 and transformers and all the technology that came again from Google and OpenAI and the like. They happen to be very good at not just answering text questions. You know, I'm sure your listeners have used ChatGPT, and we know that it's good at answering generic questions, text-based questions. Not only that, but it's also good at writing code. And code to us was really the transformational technology that we saw an opportunity to leverage. We can enable the business user to do more with data processing and technology in the enterprise, not by writing text, but by writing code. And if you think about this, well, computer code just happens to be a subset of text, you know, writing poems, writing essays, writing copy, writing patents. Computer code just happens to be a subset of that. And that's kind of like where our interest is today. Like, okay, we know that enterprises have to do data processing. They have to be more efficient on their overall business processes. And we have also this superpower technology that we can refer to as generative AI, large language models, ChatGPT, and the like. And then how do we bring those together is what we found HAL 9 to solve. And, you know, still a very much ongoing process. It's a startup, so everything changes literally every few weeks. Like, we feel like, you know, we need to adapt, and especially on the area of generative AI. And podcasts like yours, David, like help a lot, kind of like keep everyone up to speed. But yeah, that's kind of like where the company started from, and, you know, explains a little bit also where we're at today.
It's so fascinating to hear your story in your career, Javier, to your earlier point about, like, if something predates my time, something that many of our listeners may not know is that I got my career started in actuarial science. And in fact, I was working on COBOL and IBM mainframes and Fortran to actually manage systems for batching jobs at night when we were just doing the classic on-premise data analysis and prioritizing those workflows. So very familiar with the space where you got started. I remember many good days of working with Microsoft Access. It's just one of the great first databases, but of course, pre-cloud, right? And pre-scale-out, it was very localized. So sounds like you did some great contributions to one of the OG players that many of us who've been around the data block have seen and known over the years.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm glad that you have that background. And, you know, it's funny because in some ways, nothing has changed on the past 30 years, right? Like we still have data and we still have rows and, you know, we have unstructured data in documents and we need to make sense of all of that. So, you know, in some ways, the core problem, you know, we're still trying to solve the same thing that we were trying to solve with COBOL or Access or the like. But in other ways, it is completely transformational the way that we've addressed the same problem. Yeah, with technologies, even deep learning, right? And now large language models and code generation and all these things, you know, there are similarities, but also it looks something completely different that I don't know if you've done this mental exercise, David, but if someone had, you know, could travel back in past and talk to past David and past Javier and tell us, hey, in like 20 years, right? Or 25 years or as long as it has been, you're going to have like AI that writes code for you and, you know, researchers would have solved all these problems and you're going to scale to, you know, like trillions of rows and all these things. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to believe it. It's like, that would have felt like science fiction, but that's the world that we live in today.
It's so incredible to see how we're always dealing with the same use cases. These opportunities have not changed from 20 to 30 years ago. A business is business, but the technology does change. And you mentioned part of your career was focused on RStudio. I'd be curious to see if you might have some insights on how the market has changed for developers. I remember there was a good time period where R and Python were, you could say, neck and neck competing in the data analytics and data science world from research and industry. And that has shifted significantly in the last few years. Curious if you might have some insights to share with our audience, if they're emerging developers or what you're seeing between the tech stack.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's a great question. So to give you some context, I mentioned that I've always had a passion for mathematics. I did a double degree on mathematics and computer science. And when I switched from working at Microsoft Research to RStudio, RStudio really got pitched to me as, hey, we have a lot of statisticians, right? Or actuaries like you, David, that, you know, don't have like a great development environment to do statistics. When I started working at RStudio, I really didn't jump ship for data science or machine learning. You know, the transition was, hey, let's help statisticians have better tooling. And during the 5 years that I was in RStudio, I saw the transition from, well, really, if you know statistics, right, and you're using a computer, you're really a data scientist, right? And there was like the first, I would say, skill transition there, right, from, you know, if someone was a statistician, you know, they might want to call themselves a data scientist, mostly because businesses and the world needed more data processing in the form of statistics, right, and modeling and the like. And then kind of like almost feels like next year, but I think it took about 2 years, the Python community really started taking off on the data science space even stronger. And even the Python community, which was growing around data science, with, again, the advent of technologies like TensorFlow and PyTorch and machine learning became, to some degree, mainstream. And I saw another transition there of skills and titles from, well, if I'm a data scientist and I already know modeling, you know how to use logistic regression, linear regression, XGBoost and the like, maybe I should apply those skills to machine learning, right? And use TensorFlow and PyTorch. And again, I saw a lot of the titles move from, well, now I'm a data scientist to I'm a machine learning engineer, right? Or I'm doing machine learning. And that's where my time in RStudio finished. But now we started to talk about titles like prompt engineer, right? Or LLM engineer and the like. And right now we're in the midst of it. So I don't know if the prompt engineer title is going to stick, or, you know, we're going to have a Gen AI scientist or whatever that means. But yet again, we're in another transition where, you know, like the jobs in some ways have been reduced, right? Like we have probably less statistician job openings or less data science jobs openings, or at least they're probably growing slower. But now we have new jobs like machine learning or AI engineer and now prompt engineer and the like. So that transition was definitely interesting. And I don't think we have finished it by any means. I can just imagine that things might accelerate over the next few years and find some unexpected skill transitions that we'll have to go through, right? And especially for those that are working closely in this field.
I think you're absolutely right, Javier, because the technology always changes and we're going to continue to see more technical roles open. We don't necessarily know what that tech stack looks like. We don't necessarily know what that title looks like. And we don't necessarily know what the final products look like. But there's that consistent theme that we're moving more so into a data powered and soon to be AI powered society. And prior to, you know, you founding HAL 9, you had the opportunity to work at, I'd say, one of the leading research hubs to discover like which problems you were going to solve for, which was at the Allen Institute for AI based in Seattle. Tell us a little bit more about how being at AI2 led to like the genesis and creation of what is now the modern HAL 9, where you're founder and CEO.
Yeah, so really the problem that we were trying to solve was helping business users take advantage of open source tooling that, you know, you cannot really take advantage of that unless you know how to code. And to give you some background of AI2, it's an institution that got created by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. And the mission of the Allen Institute for AI is to help foster AI for the common good. So we obviously want to live on a world that we all take advantage of AI and, you know, we all can grow and the like. But part of their research agenda or direction has been for many years focused on natural language processing, this predating ChatGPT, GPT-3s, and transformers and the like. They've been along for a while. And part of our engagement with them, we realized that, first of all, we built a prototype, right? And, you know, started exploring. It's like, well, you know, could we not do drag and drop to build these types of solutions that have open source code behind them? Could we actually, you know, just automatically generate code? And how would that look like? And to our surprise, we found out that they work better than what we actually expected. We were planning to integrate NLP technologies more as a, you know, accessibility feature where, you know, like we help you with a few NLP tasks, you know, like you have an assistant or, you know, we help you reduce time and steps while you're doing either data processing or doing business workflows. But what we found out is that they actually work pretty great. And this was back in, you know, GPT-3 days, right? Like GPT-2, GPT-3 days. So it was not mainstream yet. And then at that point, we decided to bet the farm on natural language processing, mostly for code generation. So code generation, it's at the core of our company. And since then, we've been just mostly been amazed by the speed at which things are moving. And that relationship with AI2 has been really useful in the sense that they've been doing NLP research for many, many years. And we are lucky to be able to get some of that expertise and apply it to products. As many research organizations, they focus mostly on fundamental research and solving the really hard problems that are needed to advance humanity. And then there is a community of startups and small companies and growing growth companies that are working with AI2 to apply that research into products. In our case, focused on the enterprise space and applying NLP in code generation for helping enterprises embrace generative AI in their business workflows. But yeah, no, I mean, that was super useful and happens to be the case that they're based in Seattle. And it's great because we're local. They're based in Fremont. And once in a while, we get to also co-work together and the like.
It's fantastic. And it's always a pleasure to see AI2 continuing to be a leader for, you could say, humanity or, you know, human and AI together, right? For the common good. And it's so fascinating to hear the story, Javier, that your team has double-clicked into code generation and perhaps even moving into the RAG space. I'd be curious from the enterprise perspective. We know today that generative AI is used for a variety of use cases like content creation or virtual assistants like chatbots, and even designing creative copy images and currently upcoming with video and audio. What led you to a dial in on this like code generation space?
Yeah, and there's also something more fundamental that makes sense to touch base before we get into code generation and why, which is since the beginning when we started the company, we put in our mission statement, we want to empower people to actually profit from AI, right? Like take advantage of this new AI revolution that we saw coming literally 3 years ago. And to us, what it's very scary and what we don't want to happen is we don't want to have like a handful of companies, right? Creating, say, you know, like a content marketing generator, right? And just very specialized products that automate all the jobs, right? So we don't want to live in a world where, you know, as a leader of a team or a company or as a CEO, we don't want to live in a world where you just buy, say, content generation tool and that provides all your services. And, you know, like you can reduce your company size by 20% because you don't need a marketing department anymore, right? So to us, that problem is very core to the world that we want to live in the future. We don't want that to happen. Instead, what we want to happen is we want the marketing team to get automated because, you know, like that's definitely going to happen to some degree. But we want the marketing team to be the people that is building their AI solutions, right? So rather than the marketing team writing the copy directly, we want the marketing team to become the team that writes, quote, those RAG pipelines, right? To generate a copy that the marketing department is generating.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
So to us, that is really important. And really the only way of customizing these systems is again with code. And the marketing team might not know how to write code, but my guess is that they're going to be very, very good prompt engineers. And with the help of a platform like HAL 9, where we auto-generate some of the code and they have the business context to generate the prompts, what I would like to see is that the marketing department becomes the prompt engineers of marketing, where they create like a very custom solution, say for Starbucks, right, or Boeing, which are local companies. And they are the ones that are customizing how the copy gets generated. And in that path, you know, no job gets replaced. Yes, we're going to transition jobs. And, you know, you might not write the marketing copy directly yourself, but you get to teach the AI what is good corporate marketing that is needs to be written. What are your values? What are the things to consider? And it's just kind of like upgrading in some ways our skills. In a similar way, I think this happened with the Industrial Revolution, right? Like we used to be cutting clothes ourselves, right? And, you know, plowing the land ourselves. Those jobs don't disappear, but then at some point we had to, you know, create factories, right? And the factories required an engineer that, you know, sets up how to cut the fabric, right? And now we have a designer and the like. So to us, it's very important that jobs transition to the new world and they don't get eliminated. And yeah, part of the core on that and, you know, coming back to code generation is we need to enable people that don't know how to code, generate those AI pipelines, those RAG pipelines, to be able to evolve their work and be able to still keep competitive on the ever-changing enterprise market. I don't know if that answers the question, but mostly code is a necessity for enabling people that don't know how to code, put AI at their service and, you know, to be honest, also provide better copy for the enterprise, right? Like it's different to buy a generic product that generates generic copy. It is than having a team of experts that can generate copy that looks different than what your competitors are providing. So I also think that there's a value add for the enterprise and a value for the users that, you know, happen to be able to automate some of their jobs with generative AI and similar technologies.
Few things that are coming up for me that you shared, Javier. Earlier on, I think you mentioned that it's unclear yet whether the title prompt engineer as a role will become one of these leading roles in the next 5 to 10 years. We can think back to 10 years ago, how often were titles like data scientist or site reliability engineer around? They may have not even been created. And so it's now this modern new roles. But I'd love to get your take on where you think prompt engineer might be going, either as a role or a function that could be part of everyone's modern tech stack for completing a job function.
I personally don't love the term prompt engineer. I mean, I love engineering. I'm a software engineer by profession, but the term engineer in prompt engineering implies that you're technical. Usually engineers, you know, have some background in physics and applied physics and innovation and the like, regardless of what type of engineer you are. And one of the things that to me has been very interesting as part of developing HAL 9 and working with customers is that the best prompt engineers might not be technical at all, right? And the particular example that I have here is, you know, suppose that you're building a platform to help you understand your expenses and revenue in the best possible way. When we start customizing HAL 9 for particular enterprises, there is obviously like a technical part of, you know, like, hey, we need to connect to the database, X or Y, you know, like what's the table names, you know, that's obviously technical. But then most of the time, I would say that perhaps 80% of the actual work goes towards creating prompts and creating context for AI to understand the actual problem, right? So in the revenue case or expenses, you usually want the finance expert or the marketing expert to tell you what do they mean by customer acquisition cost. Because again, every company has a different, slightly different definition of what goes into the cost of acquiring a customer. And that is information and that's expertise that is not on the engineering technical team. That's expertise from the business team. So if I could steer the global conversation or titles in one direction, I would want us to not refer as prompt engineers with the title prompt engineer, but mostly like prompt specialist or prompt analyst, meaning that someone from the business space, someone with the business context and the business expertise might as well transition to this role of being a prompt analyst, a prompt expert, whichever way we want to call it. So we do think that there's a lot of opportunity there. I personally obviously don't get to generate the titles. You know, that's something that the entire world and community creates as, you know, as we evolve systems and the like. But to us, it's important to at least point out that the people that are going to be writing the prompts and steering AI don't necessarily need to be technical with the current technologies that we have. And more often than not, that expertise lies in business user or you know, domain expertise experts that, you know, happen to be able to steer the AI in a better way.
I think it's great to rely on the power of the crowd. It's so important that we see where the industry goes. And that's the same not only for titles and role functions, but also in the directionality of society as a whole. I think something that you shared quite fascinating, Javier, is about, well, where are we going? Are we going to splinter into multiple societies where some groups run processes with humans only, and others decide to go on the complete opposite spectrum of only AI agents and swarm of AI agents to manage marketing departments and run everything end to end? Or will we meet somewhere in the middle, like the ideal world that I think both you and I align in the mission of, which is like human and co-pilots? Or humans doing some code generation, some RAG, and then this co-pilot support, verification on processes. I'd love to get your take on what you're seeing, or, you know, why you believe on one of these models.
Well, obviously, I'm on Team Human, right? So we want the best for humanity, and we want, again, it's on our mission statement. We want everyone to benefit from artificial intelligence. If you really believe that AI is transformational and is going to create, in some ways, infinite wealth, even if you believe that everything is going to get automated with AI, it's really not a problem if people are the ones in control of AI. And I don't mean people by governments or, you know, CEOs of companies, but just everyday people doing their job. Like, basically, if we end up in that world and each person has control of AI to some degree, we basically end up on a world where it's optional to work, and then you still get paid, right? When you go to work and you help create your marketing generative AI chatbot, right? And you are the prompt specialist that generates it. You know, maybe it's optional if you go to work 1 week or not, because, you know, the AI that you created is still creating value. So I very much want to live on that world. And I also think that, you know, you might argue is like, well, why wouldn't your boss like fire you, right? You know, like you're not coming to the office for 1 week. I do think that the way that we solve that problem is by assigning responsibility and value, right, to the person. So in some ways, I think our job gets transformed to mitigating risk on the enterprise, right? And the person that is running the marketing chatbot, right, or different marketing chatbots, right? Perhaps there's one for Twitter and one for Instagram and Facebook and, you know, LinkedIn and the like. You're not really getting paid for doing a job. You're getting paid for doing the outcome. And I want to believe that that's kind of where we're going as a society, where, you know, we're in a company really to create value. And obviously, you know, people will always have to get fired for performance reasons at some point. But it's not about putting more hours of work and filling your week with, you know, busy work. It's about, how do I create and how do I automate this task in the best possible way to create value for the company, right? And that way, you know, we all get to keep our job. You know, in theory, we should be able to work less hours because, you know, like a lot of the processes are automated. But from a enterprise point of view, you still want to assign value and reward to a specific unit such that you can change them, right? So in the future, I would think that, you know, we don't get fired for not working hard enough, but we get fired if we tell our AI to not do something correctly, right? Or we set the wrong values on the marketing campaign and the like. So performance and, you know, moving upwards in your career and the like, those are things that probably are not going to change. But I do think that there is room for all of us to kind of like participate in that. I also truly believe that it's a better system. You know, I really don't believe that, you know, there could potentially be a corporation that says we're going to be 100% automated. Our CEO, like, you know, we only takes money and runs everything. I really don't think that that's necessarily more efficient than a company that has people that is steering AI and troubleshooting it in the right direction and passing expertise, or even our own humanity and our way of looking through the world. Like, that should add value, right? It doesn't remove value. Even if you argue that as humans, we might have less value than AI, which I don't believe, but even if you take that position, you know, a company that takes advantage in a good way of humans, like, should be more efficient than a company that is 100% automated. That's where my heart is at. Obviously, no one knows the real answer, but I do truly believe that the humans will play a central role it's just not going to be the role that we think that we play, right? Obviously, work is going to change and it's going to transform, but I want to believe that it's transforming on the right direction. And, you know, we definitely see it in that way with some of our customers, right? Like they're working with us because they do believe on a world where, you know, they can do more for their teams and they can also do more with their current team and they can be more efficient. And at the end of the day, no one hires HAL 9 as a gift, right? They all hire HAL 9 because they see improvements that their organization can fulfill. And up to this point in time, like no one has gotten fired from hiring HAL 9. The opposite tends to happen. Once you start providing more services to your business teams, they also have higher expectations and they tend to expect more from the team that hire HAL 9. So definitely, I do believe in that vision where we help teams evolve, be more productive, and also hopefully, you know, get more fulfillment, not just of life and work, but in general of their whole career.
And so continuing on that lens about your company and the product, and as you mentioned, Javier, hiring HAL 9, right? Kind of humans and machines together, these co-pilots or these co-generations. Tell us a little bit more about the product today. You know, where are you in that build? And what are some of those use cases that you're enabling?
Yeah, so the very simple way of identifying if you should be using HAL 9 is when you think of a business process that could be done better with ChatGPT, right? Or assisted by ChatGPT. This very simple way of explaining HAL 9 is like, hey, if you need to use ChatGPT in the enterprise, talk to us. And the challenges is that, well, ChatGPT is a generic tool. It has data privacy issues for many companies. Like you cannot upload all your database or all your documents to ChatGPT and just call it a day. There's also many customizations that you want to do from, say, the replies that you get from ChatGPT, right? So in general, you know, it sounds easy in practice embracing ChatGPT or similar technologies like Gemini and LLMs. But in reality, when you're trying to integrate those technologies in the enterprise, you hit various issues. And that's really what we provide on our product is a platform that allows the enterprise to get kind of an appliance ready to use conversational interface that can connect to any large language model. And concrete value that we provide is we notice that whenever we work with customers, each customer, in order to have a conversational agent or AI integrated into their company, all of them need to invest in a chat interface, in a vector DV, choosing their LLM, like having some prompt monitoring, like prompt storage, you know, like fine tuning. All of these were tasks that are unrelated to their company at all. It's just lists that you need to go through in order to embrace generative AI in the enterprise. So what we did is like we put all of those tasks, I would say that is like 95% of those tasks, we put them together in a product called HAL 9 Enterprise that then you can install in your own cloud. And then from day one, you get to have like a chatbot that connects to specific large language models and can provide value. Now, what is interesting is that, again, we do provide that from day one at a much more effective cost and much more timely than what you can do if you were to implement everything yourself. But then the really interesting remaining work is how do we customize the chatbot, right? Like how do we make it work better than ChatGPT for our enterprise? And again, this circles back to the prompt specialist, like who's the person that is going to direct AI how to answer the questions better and what context does it need and what data does it need? So to us, even though we save you 95% of the work, that 5% of remaining work is really another, you know, like 3,000% of work that over the next few years, your company should become really good at customizing ChatGPTs, making them better, making them more efficient, making them less error prone and the like. But yeah, I mean, we provide a box that already has all the bells and whistles and batteries that you would need to have your own enterprise conversational AI. And the interesting fun part is that every enterprise needs to customize that in ways that help them achieve their competitive goals and the like. And we also provide some help with that, but we actually got feedback from customers that that expertise is a strategic asset that they want to own in the organization. They want to be the ones that teach AI how to behave better to solve enterprise problems. And our platform just enables that for them to be more efficient.
It's so fascinating what you're hitting on, Javier, which is the evolution of companies. And I think in the AI levels of maturity, much like how Many years ago, McKinsey had their levels of maturity to be data mature. Companies today are questioning, how do we become AI enhanced? How do we have AI product extensions? How do we become AI enabled? And it's great to hear that HAL9 is supporting companies who are looking for up-leveling, having some fine-tuning, having custom results based on their data, which is definitely, I think, perhaps the direction we're moving in. And that'll lead us towards like what's upcoming. Generally, what's your take on the future of LLMs in the enterprise? Are we going open source, closed source? Where do you see the winners? I know this is a whole topic we could probably spend hours on, but curious your general approach here.
Yeah, so I don't have a strong point of view between, you know, open source and closed source and the like. But what I'm very confident of is that it's going to be really hard for one company to win the entire market, right? So thinking about OpenAI, say, there's a lot of value in having different LLMs. And, you know, some companies, you know, yes, they want to run them on premise, you know, and open source is like a great option for that. But even right now on the nascency of LLMs, we see companies where, you know, they have already decided to use or not use a specific LLMs. And there's also cases where it actually makes sense to use variety of them, and in some cases training them. So I do think that on the long run, it's going to be a variety of LLMs for different purposes. And the ultimate goal, I think, is for the enterprise to own their own LLM. I do think that, you know, in the same way that your database of customer records, right, is a strategic asset that you want to own, you also want to own the LLM. Now, that doesn't mean that the LLM, you know, in the same way that a database doesn't necessarily live in your organization, right? Like you might have it running on AWS or Azure or Google or whatever. That's also fine. Like the LLM might run in different places, but I do think that organizations will want to customize it. And there's going to be a lot of opportunity, not just for one winner, but for many winners. And obviously, I would be a fan of open source LLM to keep evolving, but also having closed source LLMs that are configurable and customizable and fine tunable, they also have like a good chance at being some of the most used tools in the LLM space.
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of all the different models coming out. You know, at the time of this recording in the first half of 2024, we've seen so many releases, even from companies like Snowflake and the Databricks of the world. So really exciting to see a lot of new models come out being fine-tuned. And it's excellent to see what, you know, Javier, you and your team at HAL9 are building for generative AI in the enterprise around data analytics. Love to learn if you could share with our listeners any call to action or next steps for those who'd like to learn more about partnering with you and your startup.
For sure. So I would say that if you're a student or, you know, if you're not working on the enterprise, you can head to hal9.com and play with our platform. So we have a online platform that you can use as well for personal use and the like. And if you happen to be in an enterprise that knows that in order to stay competitive, you need to embrace generative AI technologies, you can also head to hal9.com and you can request a demo, right? And basically requesting a demo means chatting with our team, obviously here to help and understand your particular pain points and interests and help you navigate this space. So head out to hal9.com and let's chat.
Excellent. Javier Laraski, the CEO and founder of HAL9. Thanks for joining us today on Humane.
Thank you for having me, David.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.
Here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.